Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Professors In podcast. I am Dr. Karen Kelski.
And I'm Kel Weinhold.
And we are very happy you're here. In terms of recording these episodes, this is actually the first episode we've recorded since the podcast went live.
Right.
So now we know how it all works and what you're hearing, and we know that many of you have subscribed, and we are absolutely thrilled about that. Just a reminder, our podcast is free, but if you become a member on the Himalaya Premium site, you get access to a bunch of perks that we are providing only for members that will be available only on the Himalaya app. So download the Himalaya app and find us and subscribe.
Absolutely. And when you join that membership only group, you want to think about it as a very, very focused Facebook. Mm. We're trying to move ourselves off of the democracy destroying Facebook. And we are doing that by being much more active on Twitter, where it is a no cost space. And then we're also providing this space for people to come at a low cost and get all sorts of things, both answers from us as well as direct interaction in AMAs and all sorts of stuff. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, we're excited about it. Thank you to those who have been listening up until now. And today we are going to be following up from our last episode, which was about adjuncting, to stay on the subject of how you deal with things not unfolding the way that you hoped, and particularly what to do when you don't get the job or the other thing you thought your future depended on, which could be a grant, could be a publication. So not just jobs, although you will probably be talking more about jobs than the others, but we know this kind of disappointment, this kind of negotiation, revolves around all the elements of academic life that are all competitive, and rejection is a part of that.
And because dealing with rejection is such a big part of academic life, and it's also just a big thing to handle, we're going to walk through it in two parts. We're going to give you a 12-step process. Shout out to 12-step. But this is actually not related to the 12 steps.
Right.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting thought. We're going to need to go check that out.
Right? Step one. Step one is a little bit like the first step of the 12-step program. So anyway, 12 steps. We're going to do six this episode and six next Tuesday, all looking at both emotional and concrete steps you can take to handle disappointment. And because we're recording this right in the thick of the job season, where people are either going to interviews or finding out that their interviews didn't work or finding out that they didn't get picked for the shortlist or they didn't get picked after the campus visit or that the publication they sent in wasn't chosen or the grant that they've been working on forever didn't get chosen. We want to give a bunch of time to how to handle this because it's just such a critical part.
Mm-hmm. And right now, let me tell you the 12 steps for dealing with disappointment that we're going to be talking about. First, feel the feelings. Second, you're not a failure and you are not your job / grant / publication / acceptance into the be-all, end-all program, PhD or otherwise. Number three, learn from the experience. Number four, be proud of yourself for stretching. Number five, refocus on what you do have. And number six, talk to supporters.
And next week, we will be talking about changing your expectations, trying to make the shift from making your expectations in your career outcome-based and instead process-based. So basically, next week we'll be dealing with how to change your expectations from outcome-based to process-based, how to take a break and recover, how to get outside your head, how to find a small step to move forward, how to find the energy and motivation with the help of others, and in the process of all of that, build your self-esteem.
Great. So, starting with the first one, face the facts, feel the feelings, which when we wrote it out, I decided should be the new catchphrase of the Professor Is In. Really gets at both of us. I'm the face the facts person, and you're the feel the feelings person in this organization.
Yeah, I'm big on face the facts, but I'd like you to feel the feelings about the facts instead of just run over the top of them because they'll catch up with you later. Everybody has a tendency when they're disappointed or when they're hurt in some way to jump over the hurt to something else, anything else, because the hurt is hard. So they often go to blame themselves or blame someone else. And academics have a particular skill there in being able to intellectualize themselves away from their feelings. Mm-hmm. I happen to have multiple advanced degrees in this category. The immediately feel something and then begin to intellectualize why it's really not that big a deal, or why I'm responsible for it, or why some evil force should be to blame, instead of feeling the feeling. So that's mm-hmm. the first thing we really want to challenge you to do, is to note, accept, feel disappointment.
Yeah, and we don't operate in the academy in an environment that's conducive to that. Your colleagues, your friends, your advisors are probably going to be really uncomfortable in the face of your feelings. And so just acknowledging that and, you know, making sure that you find space that might be outside of that relationship with your advisor, or even maybe some of your peers in your program or whatever, who might be your competitors or who might be walking their own path. They're not in the same space as you, and that's fine. They might not necessarily be the people who can help you process your feelings. But
hang on a minute here. I just want to interrupt you on this and clarify that for me, what I'm talking about here, when I'm talking about feel the feelings, I'm actually talking about this in a fairly private way.
Oh, I see.
I'm talking about like I had a therapist one time who was telling me about having gone through a really hard time. She was going through a really hard stretch, and she decided that every day she would turn on a timer and she would have just a complete meltdown, sob, kick, scream, cry. She was going to put a timer around it, but she was just going to give herself over to the pain that was actually there without allowing it to take over every day, all day. And because she did that, of course, it didn't take over every day, all day.
That's really interesting.
So I think it's really important that we go ahead and quietly sit by ourselves and go through the feelings, so we don't have to worry about anybody else's reaction to it.
No, you're totally right. Your mention of the therapist reminded me of something that Tara Brach, who is a Buddhist practitioner, that she says a lot in her guided meditations, which are fantastic, and I encourage you to listen.
Podcast
and some of the podcast, and they're actually available on lots of platforms, and some of them are only like 5, 7, 10 minutes long. So this is not a major investment of time, but she usually uses a phrase that's like, "Just see what's there. Mm-hmm. What's there? Just look at what's there." And that's all we're actually asking you to do, is just look at what's there. You don't have to tell a story about it or share it or find meaning out of it right at this moment. Just look at what's there.
The interesting thing about that, this reminds me of a practice I'm trying to do for 2020. So in my meditation practice, I'm trying to start the practice, or, you know, after I sort of get settled in, with just repeating as a mantra, listen.
Mm-hmm.
Which comes from the Shema, which I'm studying Hebrew prayers this year, and it's the critical prayer of Judaism, and the first word is listen. Mm-hmm. And it's such a transformative word that I thought, I'm just going to start every meditation with listen, which is the same thing, like pay attention to what's there. So what if after your disappointment, after the loss of that thing you thought was so important, you sat quietly by yourself and just said, I'm going to listen to how I feel about this. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds like a mixed metaphor, listen to how I feel, but I'm talking about that sort of internal reckoning of what's going on for me emotionally, and then feel it.
Yes. And I can't let the Shema go without mentioning that you and I both read that interview with Steven Spielberg like 5 years ago, in which he said that actually the origin and inspiration of his entire career was the Shema.
The nighttime Shema that his parents did with him, yep.
Listen. And he said, I took that in as a foundational practice of my life, an orientation of my life, to listen. And it was the font of tremendous
career, right?
Creativity and productivity. So even if you're not following us on this, what has now turned into a weirdly spiritual digression into both Buddhism and Judaism in
which
the space of 5 minutes.
You'll do with us quite regularly, but, by the way.
But the fact is, on a practical level, if you don't do this, those feelings are going to come back and bite you in the ass.
Big
they
time.
Will. Because if you don't process this stuff, it's going to keep sort of casting a cloud over you in ways. I mean, we don't need to go into a lot of detail about why and how that will happen, but we just know it will. So just believe us on that. And it's going to cloud your ability to, it's going to cloud your judgment, honestly, and your decision making.
And it's going to just make all the misery last longer. Mm-hmm. Truth is, if you just deal with it now, go through the misery, you're not going to drag it down the road with you. And I worry so much that that sort of unprocessed pain, right, mm-hmm. is this that unattended sorrow, to quote Stephen Levine's book.
Now we're in another Buddhist.
And Jew. Stephen Levine's book on unattended sorrow, that I'm afraid it's that unattended sorrow that keeps people pursuing adjuncting into financial devastation.
Completely agree. Agree. I have a note to myself here. Adjuncting is unprocessed pain.
Yeah. All right, we better go to step two or this will be a 12-hour podcast.
Step two, you are not a failure. You are not your job. And, you know, one of the things I love about social media is the way that people just are constantly lobbing deep insights at each other all the time, all day long. And one of the ones that pops up fairly regularly is neoliberalism defines our worth as our job, our work, as our work productivity. And if we don't work and we don't have a job and we're not producing tangible profits for some corporation or at least for ourselves, that we are not valuable. We have no intrinsic worth. And I mean, I absolutely believe that that mindset has crept into all of us. I mean, except for maybe those who will have better boundaries than I do. But anyway, this really speaks to me. And so just starting from that point where productivity defines us and our values so much that we want to fight against that and say, just because you didn't get the thing and you're disappointed doesn't mean that you are a disappointment.
Right. Being disappointed is not the same as being a disappointment. And I would also add, I'm gonna just go with capitalism as a project.
That's true.
Is really not, the thing that says
you're right.
Your productivity is your worth. Yeah,
you're absolutely right.
The thing that gets us in trouble here when you start to attach to this being about you is that you start telling these huge stories about what it means, mm-hmm. and that means what it means about you instead of the job market, instead of the university you interviewed with. There are a whole bunch of things at play that are not you. I guess I would say, if you don't get the job, one of the things to do is begin to check your ego at the door about how it's all on you. It's not all on you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you keep moving, things will change. We don't know what it'll be,
mm-hmm.
but you're not a failure.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about I am a failure, I am a disappointment, those are declarative sentences. Those are nouns. We want to urge you to switch from nouns to verbs.
Right. If I say I failed.
Had a disappointment. I failed to get this grant. Well, right. That's true. Right. But that doesn't mean I am a universal failure.
If you
failure.
Say I failed, it's inherently in the past.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
true,
in
too.
In the present, it's not. Mm-hmm. It's over. Now mm-hmm. let's move on to something else.
Yeah. But for me, and this was something that Kel, when I met you, used to talk about this all the time. And I was at that point still a dyed-in-the-wool hardcore, deep in the Kool-Aid academic. And you used to say, process, not outcome, process, not outcome. And I'd be like, shut up. What the fuck? I don't even understand you.
I think you still say that.
No, because now I say it to people.
I know.
Process,
but maybe
not
about
outcome.
Different things, right?
Anyway, it's very weird because we're just so outcome oriented.
Right. And I think it's super hard. We'll acknowledge, mm-hmm. when you have a job that depends on outcomes, it's very hard to get focused, not to get focused on the outcomes. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, as a productivity coach, if you focus on the outcomes, is demotivating.
Yeah.
Focus on the process that improves your outcomes that you cannot control.
Mm-hmm. The outcomes you can't control.
You cannot control the outcomes.
But the process you can.
Process you can. Control the controllables.
So that moves us to our next point, which is to learn from this experience. You didn't get the grant. You didn't get your publication was rejected, or you didn't get the job. What can you learn?
And I want to just pause briefly here to say, if you don't do the step number one of feeling the pain, you can't do step number
whatever this is.
Three, four, yeah, wherever we are.
Wherever we are.
Doing a great job of keeping track. You can't do it
right.
Because every time you try to go over near the thing that happened, the pain radiates so much that you can't look at it a little bit more objectively and say, what can I learn? What would I do differently? How what can I learn about myself here? What can I learn about myself in relation to my career here? Because the wound is so painful.
Absolutely.
So one is required. Like, this is the prerequisite, right? Mm-hmm. You can't go directly to this graduate course of learning from it. You have not taken the undergraduate course.
The intro survey
on feeling the feelings and separating you from your job.
Right. Right.
Takes that work.
Okay. Well, in any case, so you, you know, one of the things that I want to say, and this really popped up when we were looking at this, thinking about what we were going to say, a pet peeve of mine over the 10 years that I've been doing the professors in is looking at folks who have been very, very vocal about their failure to get an academic job and their fury about it, and noticing that there have been people who have made that their new identity. And I think this is a fine line, because fury is a very appropriate response to what has happened to the academy and the assault on it. Absolutely. I am so pro fury, you know, but then it becomes bitterness, and it becomes static. And it becomes this kind of soapbox that you literally never walk off of, because it's just keep circling around the same pain and the same victim stance. And yeah, it is an unfair job market. It is unfair what has happened to the academy and the defunding and so on, the collapse of high academic hiring. But I really have noticed over this last decade that there are some people who get entrenched. And that is not what we're talking about. That's not really learning from it and moving on after grieving, whatever that is for you, and sitting in it, like Kel just said, you know.
Quick aside on that, I want to challenge your core belief that life is fair. I mean, maybe it's me as an oldest child. Number one, the core belief that it's fair. It's not fair.
Well, that's
never
true.
Has been fair.
Mm-hmm.
That you deserve a job. Nobody deserves a job.
Oh my God, you sound like such a boomer right now.
Do I?
You do.
I don't mean it in the sense of...
And I don't mean that as an insult.
No, no, no.
At all.
I don't mean that.
It just sounds like a script that I've heard before.
No, I don't mean it in that boomer sense of, you've got to go out and pull yourself
up by your bootstraps.
Right. No, I don't believe that bullshit at all. It's actually the opposite that I'm trying to say.
Uh-huh.
It's there's a whole bunch of white people out there, in particular, who are thinking... I did all the things. I'm supposed to get a job.
Oh, for sure. And that white entitlement. Oh, right. My gosh.
Right? I'm supposed to get a job. And you don't merit a job by effort.
Right.
And it's actually anti-boomer. It's like,
yeah,
to quit this bullshit with, like, all you got to do is try hard.
Totally. Because it gets into white narratives.
Right.
White belief system that we live in a meritocracy and that effort yields results.
Right.
And...
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why
people are so, white people are so shocked right now dealing with the fact, what do you mean? What do you mean? I did everything right.
Right. And you watch them with their families. They go home and their families say, well, you just go, you know, well, just go get the job at that university. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to explain.
I hear Harvard is hiring.
So one of the things I want you to think about as you look at what you learned from your process of your failure, I think you can learn, like, I could have done my wording better here. I can work on my pitch on this. You know, I didn't really study enough of the grant successes to do that. Also look at the internal things to learn. Like, how far out of balance did your life get in the pursuit of that thing?
Mm-hmm.
Can you learn that balance might be better because it'll be there after you get it or don't get it? So if you made yourself ill to get the grant, not get the grant, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So think about that.
Yeah. But you know what? Let's get real practical now. Practical advice is, there are so many ways that you can actually actively learn from all these experiences. We
Absolutely.
Don't just mean in a Buddhist sit on a pillow and meditate sense. We mean go ahead and ask the search committee chair for some feedback from your campus visit.
Right.
Ask the editor for the feedback. You may have already gotten reviews, but there may be some additional things that he or she would share. Or even looking at those reviews, yeah, they're hard to take. I mean, that's a subject for a whole other podcast, really, of how to cope with reviewer number two, and we get it. It's very painful and difficult, but you know what? There's a lot of insights in this review sometimes that if you can just manage to set your ego aside, you can actually learn a great deal from. You can talk to people, your advisors, whoever they might be, And that could include your own mentor or not, if they're not really a trustworthy person or some other tenured faculty, a faculty member that you trust, or even turn to the professors in. You know, our Facebook page is rife with good advice that is sort of crowdsourced. There's all sorts of places you can get great advice. And so turning your private disappointment into a place of engagement with others.
And I want to give you a little heads up here. I'm going to go back to this. The first course in this series is that you have to feel the disappointment. Because if you go to people in a place of that sort of grief or hurt or,
good point.
Right? Either mad or weepy or whatever. If I find this, I'll put this citation in the premium membership, or somebody can ask me on Twitter, but I think it was Martha Beck was doing research around how people responded, like walking into a store, acting needy or acting like they knew what they were doing. And not surprisingly, the people who acted needy, nobody came up to them. So I think I always think that's such a, that offers so much insight into how we approach people with our needs. So find someone you can approach as a, in a collegial way, as an equal scholar. And I don't mean maybe equal in knowledge, but that you're there as a scholar and you're saying, listen, this is what I did. This is how I did it. Where do you see places that I can improve?
Yeah.
And you know, lots of people write to the search committees and say, could you tell me a little bit about why I wasn't chosen, why I didn't move forward. A lot of times they won't answer. Sometimes they will.
I might even use different wording. I'm not saying you have to, but that why was I not chosen is a tricky syntactic structure there. I might say something like, I enjoyed meeting all of you. I would like to know if you could provide any information for me for my job search moving forward. I would really value your insights. And then, that's a little bit more, I feel like that's a little more proactive and owning of your own space, a little bit less like, please tell me.
Right. And I think that a lot of times people forget that they can ask. You can ask before the search, who's going to be on the committee, who's going to do this? And at the end you can say, I'd welcome that feedback.
Yeah. They might not answer. But that doesn't stop you from trying.
HR can find, they feel.
Another thing that everyone can do is look at the people who did get the grant or who did get the job. It's painful, of course. Envy is going to be there. Got it. Absolutely. It's there, as Tara Brock says. It's there. Envy is there. But despite that, or in addition to that, you can then say, well, how many publications did they have? How many? Where did they publish? What exactly is their work on? Now, I'm not saying this will make sense to you necessarily. Although back in the day when I had my first disastrous year on the academic job market, when I was still ABD, I did do this. I actually made a whole year of self-study because I got no academic professionalism training from my department whatsoever. In fact, I got almost anti-training. My department had literally said to us, none of you are going to get a job, so don't even bother trying. That was in our orientation meeting when I arrived for grad school. And so I decided to proactively make a project of self-study to find out who was getting all the jobs. And honestly, that year is the origin of the, ultimately, you know, 20 years later, the origin of the professor is in. But the fact is.
20 years?
How many years?
Since you've been out of graduate school? When'd you leave?
Oh, yeah. That was 1990. So how many years?
Well, it's 2020, so make it 30.
30 years ago, that was...
Karen is young at heart.
That's right.
Got to remember, graduate school wasn't yesterday.
That's right. Anyway, the fact is, it isn't necessarily... I don't want you to take this advice as suggesting that you're going to find equity or fairness, because you might find things that look grossly unfair. People do.
But you may discover
that you have three articles. The person who was hired has one article. And you're like, but I thought publications would get me a job. Well, again, fairness, it isn't a black and white system here. So, but it is all information, all of it.
And the other thing that Jane Jones from Up In Consulting that I created The Art of the Article with, she and I talk about this in the first module. It's a 10 module process, 10 weeks. And the first one we talk about actually doing the research to understand who is publishing in the journals you want to be published in. Where else are they publishing? Mm-hmm. What is that journal talking about? Like actually doing the research. So if you get rejected from a journal, go back and check and study and say, what? Oh, wow. They always have an abstract in this place. And I didn't do that. Like, because study. We also recognize that if you are a first gen college student who is coming into the PhD, who has in particular believed that coming into the PhD is going to be joining a community of scholars who are in an intellectual pursuit, all of the things that we, the mythology of the academy, it can be really easy to forget to do that because you're so immersed in them. So I think we just want to be, I'm sorry about the splash of cold water on your face, but this really is critical that you step back and do this, that you learn as you go. That so whether it's from the academy, whether it's from the article, whether it's from the job market, look at the damn thing.
This isn't a sort of magical system that's outside the realm of, I don't know,
capitalism.
Of capitalism and logic. And anyway, whatever, we've said that before. So I think you got it. But I think this is number five because we didn't bother to number them on our notes. Be proud of yourself for stretching. You tried. You got that manuscript into that journal. Well done. You applied for that grant. Well done. You did it. You applied for that job. Really good on you. These are things that you stretched yourself to do, and it is so important that you take a minute to recognize that. Recognize the achievement. Don't go directly. And I'm speaking to you now as someone who lives in this space of go directly to the failure, go directly to what did not work. The glass is half empty. I always skip over the first part, which is, wow, I actually tried. I showed up. I did it. Mm-hmm. I made the attempt. Mm-hmm. Didn't work out the way I expected, but... So I'm telling, do what I say, not what I do.
Right. And I think that we hear from people all the time about applying for jobs was so hard. And this was so hard. But I don't hear them saying, hey, I gave myself a party for trying or for applying because that's not the goal. Remember what I said about process, not outcome? If we pay attention to the process, then we would say, I am going to celebrate the fact that I submitted this because that's what I can control.
Yeah.
And that is my place of joy. And that's what I'm going to do. And now I'm going to go find something else I can control.
Yep.
And we also hear a ton of people who don't submit the article, who don't finish the book, who don't apply for the job.
Absolutely.
So and we'll keep talking to you folks too about how to do that. We have a podcast coming up on, you know, how to get a plan and how to keep it. But really, just stop and congratulate yourself for being in the arena. It's like Brené Brown talks a lot about that. I can't remember who she's quoting, but she just loves that quote about the spoils go where the prize goes to the man in the arena. And we'll just change that all around gender-wise and just say, if you're out there fighting, congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Number five, refocus on what you do have. And this is interesting. You know what? It sounds like that pop psychology, self-help, blah, blah, blah. And old Karen would have been very skeptical of this. It's like, oh, just do a gratitude list. But actually, I have now observed, because Kel started the Unstuck program and has run it now for how many years?
Almost three.
Almost 3 years.
Yeah, almost
and,
3 years.
And hundreds and hundreds of people have gone through it. And we have watched their outcomes. And one of the core functions of the Unstuck program is to rewire your brain away from basically, well, I don't want to, from what you don't have to what you do have. Sure. You should describe it.
Well, one of the things that the program is designed to do is to help you practice working against that, I think it has a name, negativity bias. It's that thing where, right? Is that it? It's like where our brains, we attach to negativity really quickly. We find the problem. I'm sure some biologists can tell me, or neuropsychologist or neurobiologist or one of the idgists can tell me why that is.
Just call them idgists.
Idgists, biologists.
We love you, STEM people. We're laughing with you, not at you.
I love STEM people.
Yeah.
They're among my beloveds. All right. I'm sure there's an evolutionary reason for that, and it makes perfect sense, right? Hey, that thing cut you.
That saber-toothed tiger was kind of unfortunate for John.
Yeah, right. Uncle Fred got killed by that.
Did not end well.
Better run from it, right? That stick that poked me made my hand swell up, so I better not let that stick poke me again. So it makes perfect sense, but it doesn't work as well in a modern context. So one of the things we do in Unstuck is we practice focusing on what works. Mm-hmm. So one of the first questions I ask people to do every day is focus on what worked yesterday. Why did it work?
Yeah.
What worked?
Yeah, that's wild.
Why did it work?
Every time I hear you do that with your coaching clients, I'm just stunned,
right,
and amazed.
Because if I said to you, if we were in a coaching session right now and I said, how did your day go yesterday? I want you to look at what popped into your head. Was it, you know what? I wrote. It was, I planned on writing 1,000 words and I only wrote 10. It's like, okay. How about if we focus on what you did do? Right. But it wasn't enough. Okay.
You did write 10 words.
I did write 10 words you didn't have yesterday.
Right. Yeah, 10 new words.
So focus on what you have, mm-hmm. right? I have a completed article that just needs to be reworked. Mm-hmm. I have a grant that I got a tremendous amount of feedback on. I have my health. I have all these plans. There will either be more jobs, or this may be the point where you start saying, hey, you know, I have all these things. I'm kind of tired of chasing that one. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do something else. And this may be the beginning where you start to refocus on what you have, that you begin to rethink what you're doing.
Right. Right. There's more to say about that, but, and almost, I think it could be the subject of a whole podcast in and of itself, of basically confronting the scarcity mentality that prevails.
Yeah.
And I would say prevails in the academy, but it prevails in American society. It prevails in capitalism. It just prevails. There isn't enough. There's never enough. I'm never safe.
But there's been a whole bunch of new research out about an increasingly fear-based scarcity society that we have. We wake up in deficit.
Yes.
I didn't get enough sleep.
Of course.
But for the first time in the studied time that there, we are the first time in America, at least, in a very fierce scarcity based system.
And I think in an era of environmental catastrophe, we have come right up against, especially 2019 was a bit of a turning point. Not for everybody.
Except for the people who were paying attention a long time ago.
Yeah, of course. Some people have been talking about this since the 70s, of course. But I think for the public at large, really coming up with, wow, Earth is so truly finite in our lifetimes in some important ways. And I think that plays into it. So anyway, like I said, that's a huge topic. So for today, we'll just point to it and move on to number 6. Which is, and this will be the last one for today, is talking to your supporters. And what that means is, so this is moving away from the sitting quietly and looking at what's there to now sharing it with others, but and really asking yourself, taking some care with who you speak to in what way about this, because this is vulnerability. I am disappointed. I'm so sad. I really thought I was going to get this job, and I didn't. And there are not everybody's safe to talk to. So when we say supporters, we don't mean that in a glib way. We mean that in a very serious way, that that you ask yourself, who do you have around you who does support you? And making sure that they are people who they might be able to listen to you vent, because venting is great. Venting serves a purpose. But then when it goes into enabling.
Right. So there are those people who you can say, you can go and just say, I'm so pissed. I applied for 10, you know, 50 jobs. I got 3 Skype interviews. I got nothing. Mm-hmm. Or I got to campus, or I went and I saw the other 2 people and I cannot believe they hired that asshole. Don't they know? Blah, 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 blah. That's really great that you can have somebody who will listen to you say that. Mm-hmm. That person also has to be some, and it's a good thing to say it, like get it out of your system. That person also has to be the person who after letting you vent, then turns the ship toward perspective and turns your eyes toward the, okay, I hear you. That's the past. They may not say it that way, but okay, I hear you. That was great. I totally understand. What's the plan now? And not what we get from so many people was, wow, I can't believe you got a PhD, tried to even get it. I mean, why'd you get a PhD?
Mm-hmm. Which is like a lot of us, our families are the source of that. Well, I told you not to get a PhD. Well, I never understood why you were doing that anyway. I mean, that's very, very common.
But also the one we were talking about earlier, which is like the, can't you just go down here to the local university? Mm-hmm. and just get a job there.
Right. Or the one that that is so common with many people confronting many, many struggles, health struggles as well, or death of someone close to them. I mean, so this goes far beyond just disappointment in your career. But, oh, I'm so glad that didn't happen to me. Oh, I'm so, you know, wow, that sucks. But, you know, I'm just so glad that I still have two campus visits coming up. I mean, it's a very common human reaction. It's a kind of distancing. It's very common. In fact, if you see yourself doing it to others, I'd ask you to stop a moment and look at your motivation. But right now we're focused on when you're the vulnerable one coming up and someone does that to you. It's quite painful. And so just, you know, the self-care, to know that it is better to surround yourself in these situations with people who will actually support you in your process.
In your process, right?
Yeah.
And a little aside on that, if you're surrounded by people who are saying, I can't believe how you did that. I can't believe that you managed to have two kids and apply for 50 jobs. It's so impressive. That is actually not helpful. I had a great conversation on Facebook thread when we were on Facebook for the Unstuck groups about how many people loathed hearing that said to them. Mm-hmm. People struggling with health, with children, with deaths, with all sorts of things. And I came to realize how distancing that is. Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, I can't believe you did it, which distances me and say, I'm not like you.
Mm-hmm.
When we can simply say, tell me a little bit about that process. Mm-hmm. Tell me how you managed it.
Yeah. I had lunch with a friend just last week, and this is a good friend and someone I really like and trust. And she actually said to me, oh, you have just so much bad luck, Karen. And I said, really, I said, I do? And she goes, well, yeah. I mean, you had that fall, you had a concussion and broke your elbow. And I was like, yeah, I mean, that happened. But like, I don't know. I had never defined it as bad luck per se. I was just like, life is like, that's how it is. Like, we just sort of lurch from one catastrophe to the next.
Well, you know, admittedly, Karen, it's been a rough stretch.
Like, yeah. And that was like, well, she led with that. And then we had lunch and I realized I was feeling kind of yucky through the whole lunch. And I continued to feel yucky for the rest of the day. And it took me a couple days to realize that it all went back to that one statement. And I don't want to litigate the rightness or wrongness of how much luck I do or luck, good or bad, I do or do not have. But rather that it was distancing.
Right.
That's all it was. It was anti-relational.
To be clear, I was not in support of that comment just because I said, well, it has been a rough stretch. Mm. Because I had the same thing happen this week where I went to dinner with friends. Karen couldn't go with me. And it's been a little bit of a rough stretch. We've had people very close to us die, people very close to the people we're close to die. We've had just some, it's just been a bumpy bit of a road in the last year, let's say. Mm. And I went to visit my friends and just in passing, one of them said, well, I'm glad we got to see you between tragedies.
Oh, God.
And I was like, what? What?
Jeez.
I was like, And I said, well, I mean, two of those weren't really tragedies. I mean, they were
sad.
They had lived
full lives. They were sad, but they were tragedies.
Sad, but they weren't tragedies. Right. And yeah, in the last few years, we've actually had some legitimate tragedies. I don't really like the feeling that you're just waiting for the next one.
Right.
What am I, bad luck Schleprock? I'm not liking
so
this.
Basically, we have fairly good insight into how people view us. All right.
So, yeah,
okay. So let's
so anyway,
move on.
Moving on. So the upshot being surround. Now, what's interesting about that is those are people who love us very, very dearly.
All of them. My
very
friend.
Very dearly.
Yeah.
And so there are moments where you can look at that and laugh and say, I know you love me and you support me. And you were just human in that moment. So
right.
I truly was not hurt or offended or anything. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have the same response. I was just like, sometimes the things that come out of your mouth.
But also, I think this is a relationship thing with our friends, is that sometimes if this is a good friend, you can say, you know what? I want to circle back to that. That kind of hurt my feelings a little bit.
Yeah.
And That's a topic for another day, not related directly to what we're talking
right,
about.
Right, but I do think it's a good thing to start to pay attention to when you have, I think the yucky feeling in your stomach is the perfect mm-hmm. marker for it.
Mm-hmm.
So don't judge by what the words are, judge by the how that makes you mm-hmm. feel. Did it make you feel lifted up and heard, or did it make you feel, do you leave the conversation with them feeling a little bit more healed and ready to move forward,
mm-hmm.
or do you feel like you are back to feeling like you're a failure and it's mm-hmm. never going to work? And those right. are the people to aim for and aim away from.
Mm-hmm. We are here to help you maintain mental health, physical health, emotional health to the degree that that's possible as you do it and as you confront all the challenges that arise. So next week, part two, we're going to cover six more strategies, and they are somewhat more in the realm of action steps, less sort of philosophical principles and more do this now.
Yes.
So thank you.
See you next week.
See you next week.